We're less than a month away from the September primary, and with mail-in voting and early voting days, we're even closer than that. And if you've turned on your TV or logged on to YouTube recently, you've probably been bombarded by local campaign ads.
Remember where you come from. Stand up for people counting on you, and always be a leader in the fight for justice. I'm Ed Markey, and that's why I approve this message.
Together, we will recover. And when this crisis has passed, hear me loud and clear. Quality healthcare will be a guaranteed right for all. In the U.S. Senate, I will lead that fight. I'm Joe Kennedy, and I approve this message.
Two samples of official ads there from Ed Markey and Joe Kennedy in their primary race for the Senate. But then there's also Super PAC money and their ads, and who's behind those? And are these ads at all working? And what do they tell us about the state of a number of races during a pandemic? To help us answer those questions, let's turn to John Carroll. He's WBUR's senior news analyst, the man behind CampaignOutsider.com, and a recovered ad man. John Carroll, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Jamie. Good to be here.
So first, what did you hear in that little sample there of Kennedy and Markey? Good political ad making? And since we ask you this question all the time, what makes a good political ad?
Well, the Markey ad, for one thing, is trying to convince voters that he's not an absentee senator. It's basically filmed with him walking around Malden. The idea that, you know, you put out your credentials is something that is a basic of advertising. There are three kinds of ads, basically. There are biography ads, there are issue ads, and there are attack ads. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen the third group in this race between Markey and Joe Kennedy the third, but we've seen basically a lot of issue-oriented ads, and both of them are put the same issues, the same positions.
Yeah.
That's one of the difficulties in this race overall.
John Carroll, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you here. We're going to carry forward, but if we lose you, we'll get you back. Okay, so I do want to dive a little deeper then into this Senate race between Congressman Joe Kennedy and incumbent Senator Ed Markey. And I want to play another clip here. It's a digital ad that Kennedy aired recently that got a lot of attention. Let's listen to just a shortened version of that ad.
When I decided to run for office, I heard it all.
You don't get how it's done around here.
You don't have a good reason.
You're too young.
You don't have the experience.
Take a seat.
Wait your turn.
Slow down.
Calm down.
Pipe down.
And why tackle an incumbent?
That's why I'm with Joe Kennedy.
Why I'm with Joe Kennedy.
I'm with Joe Kennedy.
Because he speaks to the urgency,
the frustration,
and the passion of the rising generation.
He gets that voters nowadays expect more from people in Washington.
So, John Carroll, what do you say? Effective ad?
It could be effective if Joe Kennedy actually backed outsiders in other campaigns, but he didn't. He didn't back Ayanna Pressley when she challenged Mike Capuano. He didn't back a couple of other Rachel Rawlings in her run for DA. So it's a problem because he doesn't really have or has not been able to establish a real strong rationale for his challenge to Ed Markey, except generational change. And I think that the basically that position is not really resonating with a whole lot of voters because they think Ed Markey has done a good job in the issues that they care about.
Well, and I think it's maybe also worth noting this idea of waiting your turn, as our executive producer said today, waiting your turn for a Kennedy means one thing. It's like saying to Prince Charles, wait your turn for the throne, right?
True. But he's not campaigning against the Queen.
Well, let's see how Ed Markey, certainly not the Queen, responds. We have a little bit of an ad here featuring Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
The problems we are facing today of systemic injustice and inequality require strong, progressive leaders. And Ed Markey is that champion. He was an original co-sponsor of Medicare for All. He co-authored the Green New Deal with me last year, and he is a stalwart champion for racial justice. When it comes to progressive leadership, it's not your age that counts. It's the age of your ideas. And Ed Markey is the leader that we need.
So what do you think of that, John? Is that a good response to the Kennedy ad there?
Yeah, I think it takes the issue head on, basically undermining the whole idea of generational change, because what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is saying is it doesn't matter how old you are. It matters what your ideas are. And Joe Kennedy has come to Medicare for All a little late. I'm not sure he's on board with the Green New Deal. She's essentially trying to neutralize that that aspect of this campaign, which is really the strongest issue that that Kennedy has, is like, I'm a lot younger than you are.
Right. So let's talk about the money here in this race before we move on to another one. Just how much money is being spent on the Senate race here in Massachusetts?
Well, you're talking about millions at this point. I mean, Joe Kennedy went up in early May, and he's been on the air ever since then, and he'll stay on the air until September 1st. Just in that first ad, the Malden ad with Ed Markey, he's spent $345,000 on just that run. Over 5 days. So we're seeing significant money, but we're also seeing significant money from the outside groups.
Super PACs, right?
Right. There are two environmental groups that are going to spend over $1 million combined for Ed Markey. There's a new leadership PAC that is formed to support Joe Kennedy. They're up to about $2.5 million that they're going to spend on advertising. So those are significant aspects of this race. There was an attempt to keep super PACs out, the so-called People's Pledge, but it didn't work out. Ed Markey said, you know, as long as they're positive ads, it should be okay. Joe Kennedy said, well, that doesn't really work at all. And so neither one of them is actually trying to avoid having outside groups come in and influence the race.
And John, I just want to note that Joe Kennedy does support the Green New Deal. Okay, so on the money part of this, is this amount of money and amount of super PAC spending, as you just mentioned, is this typical for this time in this type of primary, or is nothing typical right now with the pandemic?
I think there are instances where super PACs have come into a primary like this, but I think that this is unusual because there's no basically retail campaign. Mm-hmm. There's very little of the candidates going out and meeting people. So they're relying more and more on advertising to deliver their message, because they're not really getting news coverage of major events because they're not having major events.
So, John, I want to move on to the 4th District, which there are 9 Democrats and 2 Republicans running to fill Kennedy's seat. Let's listen to a few of their ads.
No civilian needs a weapon of war, and this Marine will fight Trump to ban them. I'm Jake Auchincloss, and I approve this message.
I refuse to allow Congress to offer thoughts and prayers after every shooting, but fail to do anything to stop the next one. I'm Becky Grossman, and I approve this message.
I'm running for Congress to fight for social and economic justice. I'm Issan Leahy. I approve this message because it's time to change the face of Congress.
Alan Kazee's running for Congress because he knows the only way to change a system that shuts people out is to bust the door down and let them back in.
So, John, that wasn't even everybody, but anyone stand out to you in that?
Well, let me just preface this by saying the ads in this campaign are really important. In June, there was a survey that came out that said 60% of the voters in the 4th district were undecided. So that's a lot of minds to get made up. And so it's more important, I think, than usual for these ads to try to break through all the clutter. I think the Jake Auchincloss is spending the most money, as far as I can tell. His parents have also set up a super PAC to support him. I think he's basically trying to dominate the airwaves in terms of this particular race. The other candidates are trying to keep up with him. I'm not sure that that any of them really can match him dollar for dollar.
So I can't help but be reminded of the race for the 3rd district up in the Merrimack Valley. Does this remind you of that race where there were so many candidates running and it was a sort of, you know, close race to the end there, and then ultimately Lori Trahan prevailed?
Yeah, I think in that case, they were able to go out and do retail campaigning. So that helped. And Lauren Trahan had connections to the district that the other candidates didn't. In this case, most of the major candidates running in the 4th district are from Newton or Brookline. So, but, you know, this district goes all the way down to, what, Fall River. Mm-hmm. And so there's a big gap there that that is not filled by sort of the local favorite. None of these candidates are really the local favorite if you look at the district overall. So I think that's one of the big differences between the two.
And I do want to move on to one more race. I just want to ask quickly, you mentioned money. How important is it going to be in this race?
It's pretty important because essentially you have to introduce yourself. These are virtual unknowns, except for Alan Casey, who ran for governor, I believe, before. But I think, you know, the most of these candidates are starting from zero. So they really need to make an impression. They really need to get on the radar screen of the public before they go into the voting booth or mail in their ballot.
Alan Casey, a candidate for many offices, we believe here. So, John, I want to ask you about another race that's getting a lot of attention. It's the race for the 1st District in Massachusetts. It's getting attention because, for a number of reasons, including the sort of progressive upsets that we've been seeing in this cycle, Cori Bush, Jamal Bowman, Marie Newman, among others. It's where longtime incumbent Richard Neal is facing a progressive challenge from Holyoke Mayor Alex Morse. Neal, the powerful chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, serving in Congress since 1989. Morse is openly gay, 31 years old, and the mayor of Holyoke. What stands out to you in this race?
What stands out to me is the vulnerability of Richie Neal at this point. Alex Morse is trying to tie him to corporate interests, to the financial services industry, basically to say that he is not doing the people's business. He's doing the business of corporate America. Richie Neal, I think, is hearing footsteps pretty significantly. He just released an ad with Nancy Pelosi endorsing him. And I think that that's an indication of how seriously he is taking this challenge.
So actually, John, we have that ad. So we're going to hear first that ad from Richard Neal, and then I want to hear a Morse ad from the end of July.
When I needed someone to lead the fight against Donald Trump, I asked Richie Neal because he doesn't back down from anyone. When COVID-19 struck, I trusted Richie to negotiate the best deal for working people. And Richie delivers for his district. He delivered over $1 billion for Western and Central Massachusetts. If we're going to beat Trump, I need a leader like Richie in the fight.
I'm Richie Neal, and I approve this message.
And here's an Alex Morse ad that came out at the end of July in which he talked about losing his brother to opioid addiction.
Earlier this year, we lost my brother after a long struggle with opioid addiction. Doug was a good man, but he fell through the cracks of our broken and cruel healthcare system. Too many families in Western Mass know that same pain. It's why, as mayor, I started programs to treat addiction and save lives. But in Washington, instead of standing up for patients, Richie Neal is using his power and seniority to fight for the same drug companies that are fueling this crisis. I'm running for Congress to fight for people like my brother. I'm Alex Morse, and I approve this message.
John, I gotta say, both of those ads make a very compelling case.
They do on the surface. I think there's a critique of the Pelosi ad that says, you know, Richie Neal was not out in front of the fight against Donald Trump. He held back as the Ways and Means chairman calling for Donald Trump's tax returns until he got a law passed, a bipartisan retirement security bill passed that the insurance industry was pretty happy about. He also, when they were looking to help working people, he never went to raise corporate taxes that Donald Trump had cut so much. Those are the critiques of him and of this particular ad as well. that, you know, he has not been a leader that way. On the flip side, Alex Morse has taken a lot of criticism for his handling of the mayoral position in Holyoke. He, you know, his record has been a little bit up and down. Some people say very up and down, and so he's vulnerable in that area. One of the issues here is how much people sort of examine and scrutinize these ads. If you just take them at face value, they're probably reasonably effective. If you dig into them a little bit, you know, sometimes they're less so.
So, John, in just our last 30 seconds here, I just want to note, so we have reached out to Alex Morse and Richard Neal to join us on Radio Boston. And so when we will announce that when we have it squared away. But in our final 30 seconds here, John, I just want to finally ask what you think the weight of the TV ads this season are given the pandemic.
I think they're more important than they might otherwise be, because there are so few pipelines of communication for the candidates to reach the public. Television has always been the big megaphone. And so, you know, it's going to be the most effective way to reach as many people as possible that that these candidates will have.
John Carroll is WBUR senior news analyst. John, thank you as always.
Thank you.